Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. I'm Mike Pratz, and today I have with me Jacob Avila and Cray
Hello.
Bolger.
Good morning.
You'll have to excuse Cray today. Her voice is not at her best. She was partying all weekend. Now, today we're going to be discussing a paper titled Point of Care Ultrasonography for Evaluation of Acute Dyspnea in the Emergency Department. Lead author Zanabetti. This was published in Chest, February 2017, and it's out of Italy. One thing that was interesting about this article was their excellent vocabulary. I learned two words from this paper, and I think I'm going to try... I think it would be good if we could try to fit them into our discussion today. The first one...
Is this like a drinking game? Like, if you can use the word, you get...
That's right. First word is anamnesis. Have you guys ever used that word before?
No.
What does that even mean?
It sounds like a bug.
So you can... Let me use it in a sentence. You try to guess what it means.
Okay, I'm ready.
So if you are evaluating a patient with acute dyspnea, you want to use your physical exam, your anamnesis, and any diagnostic tests to help you figure out the correct diagnosis.
It means rectal exam.
In some circles...
Is that right?
You're very close. It actually can be used to talk about a patient's medical history when you're interviewing them and getting their data. In more general terms, it really means remembering of things from a previous existence or any sort of recollection, it seems like.
Wow.
Second word,
deep.
Semiotics. This one, pretty cool too. What do you think that means?
Rectal exam?
I
was thinking more weird fluids, but I mean, I guess they're in the same boat.
Again, very close. This one is the study of signs and symbols and their use or interpretation.
Whoa. Wait, so what was that word?
Semiotics.
I love it.
So cool. All right, so already the authors are off to a great start because they just have a masterful command of the English language.
Or Italian.
Right, and presumably Italian even more so. Now, let's talk about this study. So this is an excellent study. They were looking at dyspnea patients. This is a super common complaint, people coming into the emergency department saying, I can't breathe, I'm having more trouble breathing, it's hard to breathe when I'm walking around. So we know that ultrasound's great at diagnosing things like pulmonary edema, pneumothorax, pneumonia, effusions, right heart strain, you know, systolic heart dysfunction, tons of stuff. So presumably these things will oftentimes cause people to feel out of breath. So the question that they were attempting to tackle in this study is, can ultrasound help with the undifferentiated patient who's complaining of dyspnea in the emergency department? Can it help you figure out what's going on or help with some of these outcomes associated with their visit? So Jacob, can you walk us through this study and how they tackled this question?
So this is a prospective observational study. They enrolled patients over a span of 1 year, and they included kind of a large amount of patients. 2,683 patients were included. I mean, that's a pretty big N. And the way that they did this study is there was 10 emergency physicians that had pretty good training. They had like 80 hours of theoretical lessons. They had like 150 lung ultrasounds, 150 echoes, so fairly experienced. All patients that were enrolled got a vital signs, a history, a physical examination, and a 12 lead. Then at that point, they got the ultrasound and had to make a diagnosis based off of those initial things, you know, vitals, history, physical exam, 12 lead, and the ultrasound. And then on a piece of paper, they had to write down what they thought the diagnosis was. And then the sonographer was different from the treating physician, by the way. And then after that, the patients continued on the regular ER course. Some of them got chest x-ray, some got CT, some got echo, some got other labs. Then at the end, when they got admitted, they had to write down, the admitting doctor had to write down what they thought the diagnosis was. So they had three exclusion criteria. One of them was if they got discharged, which I think that's an important one. Another one is if they died, and then they excluded traumatic causes of dyspnea. Now, as far as the ultrasound itself, with the lung examination, they did a six zone technique. So it was two anterior, two lateral, and then the posterior area was another zone. So it's six or three for each hemithorax. And then with the heart view, they did basically just an apical four-chamber view and a subxiphoid view. And then with the IVC, they basically looked for collapse. Their gold standard was basically discharge diagnosis. And that was discharge diagnosis after the fact by two ED expert physicians.
So far, I'm very excited to hear what they found.
So the main point about this, the main thing that they found was that the average time from presentation of the ED to the ultrasound diagnosis was significantly shorter when you used ultrasound versus not. It was 24 minutes plus or minus 10 minutes versus 186 minutes without the ultrasound. So it's essentially like a 3-hour difference if you used your ultrasound. So you'd come to your conclusion like 3 hours earlier, basically, which is huge. As far as their actual accuracies, there's a couple things that I want to say beforehand. First off was exactly what imaging they got. 98% had a chest x-ray. Only 11% had a CT scan, which I think is probably the best gold standard. And 15% had an echo that was performed by a cardiologist. About 4% of the ultrasound findings had a double diagnosis. The most common of that was heart failure and pneumonia. So that's important. But patients can have more than one diagnosis. So as far as the diagnostic accuracy of ultrasound, the diagnosis that they made were heart failure, acute coronary syndrome, pneumonia, pleural effusion, pericardial effusion, COPD, asthma, PE, pneumothorax, ARDS, and then there's a group that was just other causes. Now, I don't want to just say what each of them are. Suffice it to say that the positive likelihood ratios for all of these with ultrasound were above 10. The negative likelihood ratios weren't all less than 0.1, so not really great at ruling out necessarily. But the best thing that we were at ruling in and ruling out were heart failure. That had a positive likelihood ratio of 21.73 and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.12. So that was kind of our best test, and it was a lot better than the ED diagnosis.
They found that ultrasound was better than the ED diagnosis for heart failure, but on the whole, it was a little bit less sensitive for some other things. For COPD and asthma, and also for pulmonary embolism, it was a little bit less. And the authors even noted that might be biased because in the ED diagnosis group, they were just getting CTs, you know, CT of the pulmonary arteries, and they would then determine if they had a PE, whereas ultrasound didn't have any other available use, you know, anything else to help their decision and diagnosis. Another thing that they calculated was how well the ultrasound diagnosis correlated with the ED diagnosis. So overall, they found that the kappa there was 0.71, which is pretty good. Now, one thing that's interesting, though, is that they didn't really look at how well the ultrasound diagnosis correlated with the final diagnosis, which was their gold standard in this case. So my thought is that if the ultrasound diagnosis correlates with an incorrect diagnosis, that's not really helpful to us. So
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I would have preferred them look at how well that correlates with what they think is their most accurate diagnosis.
It also would be nice to see some follow-up on those discharged patients that they excluded. You know, did they bounce back? Was there something that was missed?
So I think that was a lot of results, but just to summarize them briefly, I think that when they calculated all of the test characteristics of ultrasound for, you know, this 10 or so different findings, they found that overall ultrasound was usually a little bit less sensitive, but at least equally specific. So if you're using ultrasound to make these decisions on your dyspneic patients, know that if you find something, there's a good chance that it's something real that you can trust the diagnosis. But if you're trying to exclude things, which we often are in the emergency department, you have to be a little bit wary.
I agree. I think, you know, first off, we should stop referring to Italy in regards to its pasta and wine and more the land of lung ultrasound, as it seems like everything's coming out of Italy that involves lung ultrasound. So I think that adds in some bias just because you have these expert users who clearly are integrating this into their clinical practice every day. If I were that physician who wasn't allowed to see the lung ultrasound, I think I'd be a little bitter. You know, I think there was you know this patient's dyspneic, so you have some biases, I think, going into your scan. You're looking for specific things. But I think that this can actually help quite a bit. It may not give you the specific diagnosis, but it may push you down a specific pathway. You know, lung sounds are complicated to interpret, and I think ultrasound can help clarify that a little bit. Taking out that discharge patient population, though, to me still leaves a little sour taste in my mouth, only because you can still have some of these pulmonary diagnoses in there, and this may be a big deciding point for you. How accurate was it for sending those patients home? Did you have any misdiagnoses because you depended on ultrasound, or did you send somebody home you maybe wouldn't have because you see poor contractility and B-lines, even though they look good, like maybe they need a workup for new heart failure? You know, they covered a wide array of pathology, which is great, but almost dilutes, I think, their impact is that within 30 minutes, you have a suspicion one way or another. I think that's the big take home, is that quickly you can get diagnoses. I think obviously their patient population may not translate to the U.S. patient population as well, or maybe their modalities of study that they do. You know, I think our echo rates probably would be higher in this patient population. Our CT rates would be higher in this patient population. And because of those low rates, are they missing some other diagnosis that, you know, would change the accuracy of the ultrasound, maybe even improve the accuracy of the ultrasound?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is, we always have to remember about these patients that are, you know, when we're looking at the external validity, how well does this represent the population that you see and that you're going to be using the ultrasound in before you try to apply it into your clinical setting? You know, one thing that I also thought about that was kind of a limitation when they were looking at this, I think they did, they set it up, they designed the study well, but it would have been interesting to compare the accuracy of the ultrasound plus all the clinical information to the clinical information without ultrasound. Because the way that it's set up in this study is ultrasound by itself versus everything else without ultrasound. And so,
like putting it all together.
Yeah, but
that's
more,
not really
more
how
accurately.
We practice.
Yeah, exactly. So when we're practicing, we're going to be we're going to still be able to see all the other tests, the labs, the X-rays, the CTs, and then use ultrasound with that. So I think if you would have combined everything together, that more accurately represents how people use point of care ultrasound. And if you compared that to trying to get a diagnosis without ultrasound, it seems like ultrasound would have really helped you.
I agree. I think, you know, anecdotally from doing scanning shifts where I'm not the patient's primary care provider, but I'm just the ultrasound physician, that I get some information and the patient asks me, what are you going to do with this? And I say, I'm taking it back to your primary care provider because it could mean a lot of different things. You know, B-lines aren't always heart failure. You know, IVC collapsibility doesn't always mean you need fluids, and so it all has to be applied in the clinical context of the patient and with their other information.
Yeah, really good point. You can't use the ultrasound in isolation. I think we always come back to that time and time again.
But I think this study's great in that it confirms what I think a lot of us know anecdotally, is that your time to diagnosis, which in a high-pressure ED where turnover times are key, you know, you're going to know if they're going home or not, and you may have better clues to earlier treatment. To wait 3 hours to start treatment for a heart failure patient or a PE, you know, if you have a high suspicion plus the ultrasound supports your pretest diagnosis, then I think you're going to get treatment faster, you're going to get dispositions faster, which is key in our current practice environment.
Now, I do have a note about the timing issue. I think that was another one of their main findings, is that ultrasound diagnosis took about 24 minutes, ED diagnosis took 186 minutes. But one thing that you have to take into consideration with this is that the ultrasound team was doing ultrasound and then selecting their diagnosis, whereas the treating physician was seeing 20 other patients and doing all these tests before determining their diagnosis. So that may be a little bit biased in the favor of ultrasound. Let me just summarize this article, because it was a lot to take in, and it's really a fantastic study that you should read for yourself. They had 2,683 patients who were prospectively enrolled. All of them got lung, heart, and IVC ultrasound and also underwent their usual emergency department workup. In this study, ultrasound was able to arrive at the diagnosis faster and correlated well with the emergency department diagnosis. Compared to the final determination as their discharge diagnosis, ultrasound had very high specificities, although the sensitivities were kind of suboptimal for ruling out an etiology of their symptoms. So my take-home points from this study is that point-of-care ultrasound has a good correlation with the diagnosis determined by the emergency department and potentially has even higher correlation if used in conjunction with all of the other types of diagnostics that we do. It does have the potential to decrease the time to diagnosis, although in this study there were some limitations of that comparison. And overall, it has very high specificities for the causes of dyspnea in these patients. Thanks for listening to our podcast. I just want to let you know that you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes or any other service that you may obtain your podcast through. Also, visit our website at ultrasoundgel.org, where you can sign up for the mailing list to get any updates and be aware of when our new posts are out. Please give us feedback on the website. You can contact us through Twitter or email, or you can leave comments under each individual post. We look forward to talking to you again, and thanks for listening.
That was, I cried a little bit. It was so beautiful. Like, it was just, oh my God, it's gorgeous.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel.
More ultrasound gel podcast. Pressure, more gel. I have no chairs, by the way, in my house. I'm like sitting on a desk.